24 hours a day, 7 days a week. On demand, powerful talk radio. We global, and you can do nothing about it. BashaniRadio.com. Always talking about everything. Keep it locked. Keep it locked. Brooklyn, Queens, the Bronx, Staten, and Manhattan. You are listening to BashaniRadio.com. New York City, always talking about everything.
Welcome to Rethinking Mental Health with JC Mears on Bashani Radio out of New York City. Always talking about everything. We can be heard everywhere podcast is played on iHeartRadio, iTunes, Spotify, and many more. Hey guys, it's your girl JC Mears, mental health consultant, creative systemic therapist, and today we are talking with Dr. Herbert Harris, a big part of my tribe. And we're going to be talking about your tribe, your success, choosing the right people to help you through your mental health, as well as becoming a millionaire, because that's what Dr. Harris is known for, the millionaire mentor. And I'm so honored that you are on my show. And you know, I consider you my mentor as well, too. So let's go a little bit back and let our listeners hear a little bit about who Dr. Harris is.
Well, you know, first, JC, thank you so much for having me on the show. Can you hear me clearly?
Yes, I can.
Good. Well, you know, we don't want to go too far back because then we're going to ancient times. But, I mean, it's very interesting. You know, in my new book, Solving the Race Issue in America, mm-hmm. I talk a little bit about growing up in the period of segregation.
Yes.
And how, as a young African-American man who was an excellent student, it really had an impact because everything was so separated. I mean, you had the college boards, and then you had the black college boards, you had the white college boards. So everything was so racially divided. Mm-hmm. But the one thing that I think everybody respected was knowledge and ability.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
And so as a result, I received a full scholarship to attend Columbia University.
Mm-hmm.
After my 11th grade, I actually skipped the 12th grade.
Wow.
I wanted to get out of Dodge so badly that I skipped the 12th grade, went to Columbia, and was greatly outclassed.
Mm-hmm.
We had of about 700 students, we had about 125 from the Bronx High School of Science, which was mm-hmm. the top school. And about another 125 from Erasmus, which was like the number two school.
Mm-hmm.
So here I come from a segregated high school in Wilmington, North Carolina. And once I got to Columbia, you know, we were talking a bit about mentorship.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, once a person is in an environment that they're not familiar with, and I think many of us go through that, it's important to have somebody show the way. We often say, if you don't know the way, you can't go the way.
True.
And so someone has to show the way so that you will know the way.
Yeah. I have a saying, you can't lead what you do not know.
That's it. You see?
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, college was really a series of mentors. And, you know, one of the things is you never know where the mentor is coming from.
Mm.
You know, you would think that in college, you know, my greatest mentor would have been, you know, a professor or somebody in the academic arena. But my greatest mentor was actually a clerk working in the dormitory.
Wow.
Yes. Mm-hmm. He was in charge of student activities in the dorm and, you know, sort of running the dorm. And he reached out to me because he gave me the sense of family. I was only 16 and hitting New York. I wasn't old enough to go in the bar.
Mm-hmm.
Couldn't drive. You know, I mean, it was. And so being at Columbia and one of only five African Americans out of 700 and
mm-hmm.
being the youngest one, my good friend, Wyatt was his name. Wyatt gave me an opportunity to come visit with him on the weekends, to come and get a home cooked meal. And he just encouraged me and he just kept saying, you know, you hang in there, you know,
yeah.
No matter how hard it is, you hang in there. So that really set me up to launch my academic career. And from then on, the rest is history.
Would you say that he was good? He was a good support system for your mental health at 16 years old?
Absolutely. Because, you know, my state of mental health was really very tenuous.
Yes.
Because think of this, coming from the segregated South into a school that was 99.9% Caucasian, mm-hmm. into the largest city in the country. Okay. And I'm coming from a little town at that time of about 30,000 people.
Wow.
And so my mental state of mind was one of I can't do it, was mm-hmm. one of inferiority.
Okay.
Was one of fear of not being good enough. And so that support from Wyatt, as you say, was strong from a mental health perspective because it was somebody who I could consider family.
Yeah.
Who believed in me mm-hmm. and who was familiar with the terrain. Yeah. You know, because he worked at Columbia.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And he knew the ins and outs of it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And so it was absolutely critical because if your mental state is not balanced, mm-hmm. it's extremely difficult to achieve success in any area.
Mm-hmm. And do you think that also helped you to adapt to institutional racism as you were going to school at Columbia?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. You know, and really one part was to be able to get away from it.
Okay. Yeah. To create a new narrative.
Yes, a new narrative. Mm-hmm. A new environment. Mm-hmm. And when I would go visit Wyatt, it was almost like I was going home.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I get you. All right. So after you graduated Columbia, what direction did you go and who were the mentors in your life at that point?
When I graduated from Columbia, I had been very fortunate and had been in business for myself. So I had a little money. Mm-hmm. And so I was able to travel and to see things. And so guys like Cecil Brown, Cecil is now a professor out at the University of Berkeley. Mm-hmm. Cecil was a writer in the early days. He was a friend of James Baldwin, a friend of Richard Pryor. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Cecil gave me access to a whole nother arena of people.
Okay.
And so that was one. And then at the point that I decided to become a lawyer, my uncle was my greatest mentor.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
You know, I watched some of the work that he had done, you know, as an attorney. He was Wilt Chamberlain's lawyer, Della Reese's lawyer, Sidney Poitier's lawyer. So he was a man who moved in circles that I wanted to move in.
Yeah.
And so he was that mentor that guided me into the practice of law and really, you might say, helped me develop a mindset for success as a lawyer.
Mm-hmm. And was his what was his mental health present and well?
That's an interesting question because probably his mental health, he was pretty unstable in a sense mm-hmm. that he was so convicted about things.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And he was a man who would remind you of every shortcoming.
Oh.
Of every failure. Mm-hmm. Of every disappointment. Mm-hmm. and you know, whenever you had to ask him for some assistance, he was never short on giving you advice on why you should do this. And why, if you had done that, then your outcomes would be different.
Wow.
And so he was a man that the lesson I learned from him, sometimes you can have a mentor who is not kind to you.
Wow. That's powerful, Dr. H.
Yes.
Yes.
And so when you see a person who has been where you want to go, who walks among kings, who walks among prophets, who walks among millionaires, and you say, that's where I want to go. And that's the only person that you can touch who can guide you there. Then you have to make a decision. And the decision I made was, his mouth was so negative. He, there are very few things he had anything good to say. You know, if he had seen Jesus walk on water, his complaint would have been, Jesus can't swim.
Yeah.
Okay. And so I learned from him that he was a mentor, that the only way that I could get the lesson was to watch his feet.
Wow.
And ignore his words.
Yeah. So where he moved and the circles he moved was enough for you to move along with him, but still enough for you to recognize that you wouldn't want to be how he was as he communicated with people.
Exactly. I wanted to go where he went, but I didn't want to be like he was.
Yes. Yeah. And so what helped you to change your mentorship at that point where you realize, okay, I'm not going to deal with this negativity. Thank you, Unc. I'm grateful for what you're doing, but now I need a different mentor. I need a different tribe.
Well, you know, it's very interesting. JC, he put me out.
Wow.
I never left.
Mm-hmm. So he did what he knew.
Yes. Okay. So sometimes, you know, you can have a mentor who you've already gotten all that you can get from them. You just don't realize it.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And so I had gotten to that point with him where I was beginning to carve out my own success. You know, I had some success in different cases. My book, I'd written a book called How to Make Money in Music. Mm-hmm. That was popping. And so I was living a lifestyle. I had a driver.
Mm.
Okay. And, you know, it wasn't arrogance in a sense that, but when I would go to court, I'd like to drive. I didn't like subways. And so by the time I would go to two or three courts, spending $25, $35 to park each time, it was cheaper to have a driver, had a senior citizen, and pay him $300 a week, and he was happy.
Yeah.
Okay. He loved being in that environment. And my uncle's attitude was like, you can't afford a driver. You know, it was like always to diminish me. And one day, I came back from court to the office, and he had actually changed the locks.
Wow.
Took me out.
Mm-hmm.
And so he literally had to kick me out of the nest. And so sometimes your mentor will do things to kick you out of the nest to make you fly.
Yeah. Take you out of that comfort zone.
They take you out of that comfort zone. And then at that point, that was a realization then that I had mastered all that he could give.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And I was, in fact, baggage for him because I'd gotten it.
Yeah. So what was the conversation mentally when you realize, okay, well, he's serious and I'm serious too, because I'm going to step outside of him and do what I have to do. What was the conversation you were having with yourself mentally?
Well, I was not happy about it. My mental state was I was still dependent on him for validation.
Ah, you know? Woo.
Yeah. You know, and it's tough to depend on a person for validation who's basically negative.
Yes.
You know, and you know, the mind is such that you'll relish and call it success, not because you got a compliment, but simply because you didn't get cursed out.
Yep. And I had this week, I said, go where you are celebrated, not tolerated.
Yes. Yes. That's a powerful statement. That's powerful.
Yep.
And you know, so once he pushed me out of the office, I had to really collect myself, because mentally, you know, it's one thing when you make a choice to change.
Mm-hmm.
It's another thing when the choice is made for you.
And that's a big loss.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And so that doubt set in, you know, whether people would come to me as a lawyer, you know, whether they only came to me because I was with him.
Mm-hmm.
And, it made me assess my strengths and weaknesses. That, for example, I realized I didn't particularly care for dealing with clients per se.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whenever you've changed your mental state, I think it's important to cling to what you know and what you love. rather than what other people expect of you.
Or what you ought to do.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. What you ought to do based on somebody else's mm-hmm. standards.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so once I was out there on my own, I concluded that I was better doing trial work than doing office work. And so that's when I made a choice basically to start to represent other lawyers and to begin to focus on entertainment law.
Yeah.
That was an area. And, you know, when your mental condition is challenged, you really have to focus on what you have. What are my assets? So I say, I'm really good at the courtroom. I love being in front of a jury. I'm a good writer. So it forced me to promote my book more. You know, the book was just like a footnote in my law practice and everything else I was doing. But once I got out there on my own, I said, well, let me start promoting my book because these are all the things that represent the best of me.
Yeah. So, Dr. Harris, I can't believe it's 15 minutes already. It's time to take a purposeful pause on Rethinking Mental Health. And we're going to come right back and talk about how you started to create your new tribe, build your new tribe.
Excellent.
So welcome back to Rethinking Mental Health, Dr. Harris. As I said before, I can't believe it's 15 minutes. Dropping wisdoms, nuggets of wisdoms. So after you found part of your passion, you know, your footnote, mm-hmm. how did you start to create that tribe and new mentorship?
Yes, the next tribe was one of travel. Mm-hmm. You know, I got a chance to travel around the world because once you don't have that linkage to something, mm-hmm. then you realize that you're free.
Yeah.
And I met people like Prince Asiel, Tiamo Raouf, and got a chance to see the world, to see Africa mm-hmm. too. And so that was a whole nother tribe, a tribe of people who were on a spiritual journey, mm-hmm. people who were, you might say, a revolutionary journey. And so, that was a good tribe to learn how to move mm-hmm. on the international arena. Mm-hmm.
So the mentorship was somewhat vicarious as well.
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Tiamo was very close to me. I mean,
okay.
I learned a lot from him. He had mm-hmm. a style mm-hmm. of leadership mm-hmm. and he had a presence. And it was different from my uncle. Like my uncle, mm-hmm. presence was intimidation. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm bad and you know I'm bad, so yeah. step back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Tiamo's presence was one of like authority. Mm-hmm. I'm not intimidating, but I am who I am and you can tell I'm important.
Mm-hmm. And how did that change your mental mindset?
Well, I've then realized that I wanted to have that type of aura. Mm-hmm. You see, I think it's important in the mentorship area is that a part of the mentorship process is to take on some of the characteristics and qualities of your mentor.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And so it's not just an intellectual experience, mm-hmm. but it's also an operational experience. Mm-hmm. You know? Mm-hmm. It's also an emotional experience, you know,
yeah.
to learn how to watch how a leader person does not flinch mm-hmm. in the face of fire. Mm-hmm. Okay. And so much of what we do is learn behavior. So the mentors teach us actively and passively.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that tribe led me to my next mentor was Reverend Ike. Mm.
Tell me more about Reverend Ike. Tell our listeners more about Reverend Ike.
Well, you know, some of your young listeners may not know, but Reverend Ike was an African-American, but he was like the first big televangelist. Reverend Ike was on the radio and he had millions of followers. He was one of the early ministers on television.
He started it.
He started it. And many of your people now at his memorial service, you would be amazed at some of the people who were there. Mm-hmm. paying homage to him. Mm-hmm. And he is a mentor, really, really was one who changed a lot of what I'm about, because Reverend Ike did not associate with you unless he believed in you. And so before you became an employee, you went through certain tests. Now, they didn't look like tests.
Yeah.
But there were certain things that he did that made him understand who you really were. Mm-hmm. And whether you, I don't like to use the word worthy, we are worthy, mm-hmm. but whether you could truly benefit from what he had to offer. Mm-hmm.
Or the consistencies and see that you could actually be taught.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And so with him, you learned that whole power of scholarship. Mm-hmm. He was one of the greatest readers and philosophers and spiritual giants. Mm-hmm. You know, much of the personal development area, the whole arena now, if you trace it back, you can find many roots in Reverend Ike.
Yeah.
Because he taught things like be what you want to be, do mm-hmm. what you want to do, have whatever you want to have. Mm-hmm. That your state of mind determines your state of existence, that mm-hmm. your thoughts are the blueprint for your reality. Mm-hmm. And he lived it. And when you saw how the blessings had come to him, you know, I think at one point he had 17 Rolls Royces, but each mm-hmm. one had a purpose.
Yeah.
It wasn't just the idea of having 17 cars, but each one had a purpose, had a story, had, mm-hmm. had something unique. He had one of those Rolls Royce limousines. I think there are only 15 or 16 of them in the world. Mm-hmm. Okay. The Queen has one. And so you begin to see that whole spiritual growth, how as a man thinks in his heart, so is he.
Yeah.
He was a young kid who grew up in the woods of South Carolina and climbed to the pinnacle. Mm-hmm. I mean, like I say, he was a multimillionaire when a millionaire meant something.
Yeah.
Okay.
He was changing that narrative.
That's it. That's mm-hmm. it. And so his mentorship guided me to, I mean, greater heights. He mm-hmm. he appointed me as director of the Science of Living Institute. Mm-hmm. And many times a purpose of a mentor is to believe in you, to help you believe in yourself.
Yeah.
You know, when you have a real strong mentor, many times you'll perform at your best. It may not in the beginning be a sense of excellence, but it may be a sense of, I don't want to disappoint my mentor.
Won't he do it, Dr. Harris? It's so true. So would you say that the teachings you got from Dr. Ike helped you with regards to transition into network marketing?
Yes.
And then we get into the book. So share a little bit about the mentorship into the network marketing, because I know your story is powerful, mm-hmm. being one or two of the only African-American persons in network marketing at LifeVantage at the level that you are
yes.
now.
Yeah. Yes. Well, one of the things with Reverend Ike, you realize the power of leverage. Mm-hmm. You know, that he looked at the media as a way to leverage his impact. And when I really began to look at one picture, that there was a program called Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous, mm-hmm. Robin Leach.
We had that in Barbados.
Yes. And when I analyzed it, it was like I really made a mental decision about network marketing. When I looked at network marketing, I saw it as a way for an ordinary person with ordinary skills to get extraordinary income. Mm-hmm. And so my initial reason was to be able to make more money than I was making as a lawyer, more money than I was making doing anything else, and to have more fun doing it.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk about that mindset and that mental mindset, because that's a shift.
Yes.
You and I talk a lot about the value and understanding money and seeing yourself as purposeful in the money that you receive. So what was your mental shift, your mental mindset?
Well, one of the things that Reverend Ike, I realized that we had a mental block, many of us, that money is the root of all evil. Mm-hmm. And it's very interesting. You take a negative thought like that, and it can be inside your mind. And that negative thought can short circuit you in the in the performance of certain activities that can bring you great wealth.
Yeah, definitely.
And so with that mind shift from Reverend Ike, and then getting into the network marketing arena and realizing that it was, once again, it was spiritual in nature. Mm-hmm. That it wasn't about X's and O's, but it was really network marketing worked because you believed in people and you helped people believe in themselves.
Yeah.
And that the more that you could help them believe in themselves and get personal results, the more money you made.
So you're talking about a tribe successfully believing that they can do it.
Believing that they can do it. Mm-hmm. You know, a tribe that when you believe in each other and you believe in yourself, nothing is impossible. Mm-hmm. And so network marketing was like a microcosm of the real world in mm-hmm. that, you know, in corporate America, it may take you 25 or 30 years to achieve that amount of leadership and results. Mm-hmm. But in network marketing, in 3 to 5 years, you could do what a person might take 20 or 30 years to do, mm-hmm. if ever, in corporate America. Okay. And so that idea now of a true tribe, that it's not just a tribe of followers, mm-hmm. but a tribe of leaders.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. that the duplication of the leadership principles and the leadership spirit mm-hmm. is the secret of making big money in network marketing.
So we're talking about mental and spirituality merging.
Yes, yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm. And so many times you'll hear people talk about, oh, it's the product. If you have a good product, you need a good product. You always need a good product. But it's really the mentality, the mental shift to say, I can be great by making others great. Mm-hmm. That I can achieve the financial results that I need. And not just financial, but in network marketing, just the fact that you get to travel a lot mm-hmm. gives you exposure.
Yeah.
Just the fact that you see people go from being ordinary to being extraordinary. Mm-hmm. You know, I had a friend and we went down and he was buying a brand new Mercedes. And one of my network marketing friends, and we go down and we're there at the dealership and, you know, everybody's rejoicing. And he starts crying. And I'm like, man, did we do something? Yeah. And what had happened, he said, you know, I'm 44 years old and I've never owned a new car.
Wow.
This is the first time I've ever bought a car that nobody owned before me. Mm-hmm. And so network marketing gave us that ability to see people achieve their dreams. Mm-hmm. The book now, the 12 Universal Laws of Success, became a Bible for network marketing.
Yeah.
I mean, that industry buys more of our books. Mm-hmm. When you say network marketing, the 12 Universal Laws of Success, because it helped you, the level of your income in network marketing varies directly with your level of personal development.
Yeah.
And so the 12 Universal Laws of Success gave you the opportunity to develop yourself personally mm-hmm. to the point where you can create the vibration to attract the money into your life through network marketing. Mm-hmm.
And you know, this is my favorite book. And I haven't started this, but maybe I need to do this on this episode, that I think everybody should read this book. I'm grateful that I'm also in the book.
Yes.
But I think this has changed my life in so many shapes, forms, fashion. And like, I'm like, I have to have you back because we already know 30 minutes is not enough for us to have this conversation. I'm asking everyone who's on the show to share with the audience 3 ways in which you practice gratitude daily. Because I know I'm going to have you back on for us to really talk about this book and your new book that you are also getting ready to shift the world in with a new tribe. So the three ways in which you practice gratitude daily.
Well, the first is that spiritual gratitude. Mm-hmm. In my meditation, I give thanks for being alive, mm-hmm. for being one with the vibration of existence. And that level of gratitude puts me in the context of destiny. In other words, that I did not just happen onto the planet, but mm-hmm. that a divine creator had a purpose for my being here.
Yep.
And that level of gratitude really opens you up to be, see, to me, being grateful, gratitude is like priming a pump.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you live in the country, you have to pour water in. You have to prime the pump before you can get something out.
Yep.
And so gratitude is like priming that universal pump. So mm-hmm. that first level of gratitude to the creator for my existence.
Mm-hmm.
The second level of gratitude is gratitude to the self for having we'll call it the understanding to be appreciative of your health, of your physical being.
Yeah.
One of the things I love about you, you are an avid personal trainer.
Mm-hmm.
And so to be thankful for that body, that physical being that we have, that now will house and move our spiritual being along the way.
Yeah.
And, you know, when we're thankful for it, when we show gratitude for each of our organs, that they are doing what they're supposed to do and
Definitely.
Doing it well.
Yep.
Yes. And then the third level of gratitude is gratitude to other people. To recognize that we are all interdependent.
Yes.
Even in our independence.
Mm-hmm.
That we are strongest when we come together as a group.
Mm-hmm.
That when we are grateful for all the great people that come into our lives, when we are grateful for all the things that great people have done in our lives, it opens us up for even greater and better relationships. Mm-hmm.
Definitely. Those are three powerful approaches to gratitude, Dr. Harris. I think for me, part of it is looking at what do you see the role of mentorship as we move forward in the world, in people and successful business people managing their mental health?
Well, there's a scripture in the Bible and says, to whom much is given, mm-hmm. much is expected.
Mm-hmm.
And so the fact that you have had success, the fact that you have had accomplishment and growth, mm-hmm. it really requires that you now share that through mentorship. That if you have been blessed to learn the way, then it's your obligation to now show the way.
Mm-hmm.
And so that is, for me, is a very, very key point, that you must show to others that which has blessed and benefited you.
Awesome sauce. Can you share with my rethinkers? I'm here coming up with all revelations because that's what you do as a mentor for me. Can you share with my rethinkers how they can get in contact with you in the next couple of days? Because I know once people hear this interview, they're going to want to see who you are and connect with you.
Absolutely.
I'm going to suggest that they should.
Yes. Well, the absolute best place is my website, www.herbertharris.com. That's herbertharris.com.
Mm-hmm.
And there you can find a lot of our books and our writings and a lot about the things that we're doing. So herbertharris.com is the place to contact us. And for email, it's of course herbert@herbertharris.com. Yeah. You send me an email and I'll send you a great gift.
That's right. So thank you so much, Dr. Harris, for agreeing to be on the show. As I said, we're going to have you on for part two because we haven't even scratched the surface. 12 Universal Laws of Success, definitely a wonderful tool for any human being, and we're going to evolve that even more. So thank you for listening to Rethinking Mental Health, the show on Bashani Radio out of New York City. And remember to update your perspective in order to change your narrative.
Thank you. My pleasure. Keep up your great work.
Brooklyn, Queens, the Bronx, Staten, and Manhattan. You are listening to BashaniRadio.com. New York City, always talking about everything.